Hey, I'm Elissa Nicole Trust, an actor and writer based in New York City.
I'm Lauren Schaffel, an actor and producer also living in New York City.
And we are Positive Creativity Podcast.
Positive Creativity is a podcast where we speak with artists from all disciplines about how they got their start, what's inspiring them, and how they stay positive in the entertainment industry. We speak with artists based in New York, LA, and beyond.
Our goal is to give creative artists a platform to share their experiences and talk about their work. We hope that our listeners will enjoy the insights, stories, and perspectives from a diverse group of artists from all sides of the industry. Thanks for listening. Our next guest is casting director Sarah Isaacson. Sarah was born and raised in Chicago, and she is now based in Los Angeles, but true to her Chicago roots, she's currently casting Chicago Fire and Chicago Med for Universal Television and NBC. Some other previous TV credits include Midnight, Texas, State of Affairs, Connecting, and the pilots for Manifest, Baker and the Beauty, and La Brea. We loved chatting with Sarah. We loved hearing about all of the different types of casting roles she has had, which have been pretty varied, which was really interesting and has given her a really unique and varied perspective on the business, and also just given her a lot of empathy for other jobs within the industry. And we talked a lot about that and just how important it is for everybody on all sides working in the biz to just be compassionate. We also loved hearing about her hobbies and interests outside of the industry. And overall, it was just a really informative conversation for us as actors and a really enjoyable one because she's just absolutely lovely. And we enjoyed chatting with Sarah so much. And we know that you will have fun listening to this episode. So happy listening.
Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
We're really excited to chat with you this morning.
Thanks for having me. I realize that it's 8 a.m. in Los Angeles, and I've only just had my first cup of water. I gave up coffee about a year and a half ago, and I'm still feeling the results of that.
Wow, that is impressive. What made you decide to give up coffee?
I think a lot of things, mainly because I was up at night. I was just felt like I was up at night and not getting a good night's sleep. And I tried it and then I just kept going. And now it's been a year and a half.
Wow. That's wow. Amazing.
I'll have some decaf. I like a good decaf latte. But no coffee. I'll have caffeine, black tea, green tea, a Diet Coke every once in a while. So it's not so much the caffeine. Caffeine is more about the coffee. This probably isn't very interesting, you guys. Come on. How's your morning?
I also recently gave up caffeine because, well, not really on purpose, but basically Lauren knows I was drinking 3 cups of green tea every day. And then at some point last year, my heart rate was really, really, really high. And I was actually texting Lauren's husband, who's a cardiologist, like, what's wrong with me? Is everything okay? Why am I having a heart attack? God forbid. And he taught me how to do EKGs on my Apple Watch. EKGs, ECGs, whatever. Right. Okay. Yeah. And then, so I didn't drink. So I stopped drinking it for a little bit and then I went back to it and then it started happening again. And I was feeling the fluttering and I was like, okay, I think I just need to take a break. I don't know why. Sometimes it's fine and sometimes it's not, but I think maybe I'm over caffeinated. And at first I was really nervous about it and I was like, I don't know how I'm ever going to get anything done. I'm so reliant on caffeine, but actually it's been kind of fine.
Great. See, the things we learn about ourselves if we just listen for a minute.
Yeah.
Truth. Totally truth. Yeah. Actually, speaking of things that are inspiring, what look at that transition there. we always start with this larger question, Sarah. What is currently inspiring you?
So I knew this question was coming because you prepared me and I have been thinking about it. And then now, of course, in the moment, I panic and I think, well, what's the right answer? What's a good answer? What's an inspiring answer for your listeners? But I'm just going to go back to my first thought about my friends that are killing it, just like doing great work, that are raising families, working towards creating families, agreeing to new jobs that are across the country, whatever it may be that just feels like life-changing at a certain age that we're not, you know, sometimes it's sort of, expected or understood that if you're in your 20s or maybe early 30s or something, you know, that you sort of make some life changes. But some of these, my friends were, you know, early 40s, and we are, one of my best friends is raising a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. My other best friend is trying to create a family. Another friend, like I said, has just got a new job across the country, and we're, you know, 40. So it's really inspiring to think that at any age, we can make a shift, you know, and they're doing it with such grace and ease, and while also continuing, you know, their lives. You know, it's not like they are stopping their lives to do this thing. They have full lives while also raising a family, you know, moving across the country, whatever it is. So for me right now, it's like watching my friends do their thing unapologetically and just embracing it all beautifully. I mean, I was thinking like, is there a writer right now that I'm inspired by? Like I've been just went to David Sedaris, had a show here in LA that we went to, and that was so incredible. And he's so inspiring and fantastic. But, and I'm watching a lot of TV shows and movies. I watched Boom, Tick, Tick, Boom last night. Have you watched that yet?
Not yet.
Last night. So funny.
You did last night?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Another friend of mine watched it last night too. I think it was like, you know, winding down from the holiday. But and everyone just finally just wanted to sit on their couch and thought, oh, let's watch Tick, Tick, Boom. But that was inspiring. I mean, there's just so much out there, so much content, so much great work. So it's a combination of a lot of things right now.
That's such a beautiful answer. And that's just really touching and beautiful to think about the friends, the community around you,
yeah,
and the pride that you have in seeing those friendships change and just soar. That's really cool.
Well, that's, you know, I've been here so long in LA that these friends are my family. So I do feel very connected and in tune with them. Like they are my family and I'm insanely grateful and thankful for them.
That's so nice. That's so lovely. So then what brought you to LA and what is your story of becoming a casting director?
So when I'm born and raised in Chicago, did a lot of theater when I was a kid, like so many of us. And I was at Columbia College studying theater and dance. And my best friend at the time, John Wellner, who's an incredible actor based here in Los Angeles, he was working at Steppenwolf Theater. Got me a job working at Steppenwolf in the box office, and I worked subscriptions and front of house and a variety of different jobs at Steppenwolf. And then he said he was going to LA for pilot season. And excuse me, I quit everything, quit school. I quit Steppenwolf. I did and hopped in a car and drove to LA and got an internship with Jeff Greenberg Casting. And then that was during a pilot season. And after that pilot season, it was obviously hiatus. And I hadn't really learned what that word meant. And so I moved back to Chicago because I didn't have any job. And then that next year, Jeff Greenberg offered me a job as an assistant. And so I moved back to LA. And once I got here, the assistant that had left decided to come back. And so I didn't actually have a job. And so I was here having to then look for a job. And then I ended up taking the job that the other casting assistant left. So Colin Daniel, I'll explain it. Colin Daniel, who's a dear old friend of mine, was Jeff Greenberg's assistant. He left to go work for Gilmore Girls, the pilot reshoots of Gilmore Girls. He left that job to go back to Jeff. And so then I took his job at Gilmore Girls as an assistant. So first year of my casting career was as an assistant on Gilmore Girls for a year and a half. Then John Levy swayed me to move over to his office at Warner Brothers. And I was with him for almost 5 seasons on ER as an assistant, then an associate, and several other pilots that did not go. And then from there, I don't know if this is terribly interesting because everyone could just Google this, but I really want to become a casting director and I thought I was ready. You know, I feel like every young casting associate thinks they could do the job of a casting director, but they can't, but we think we can. And so I became a casting director under the umbrella of Janet Gilmore and Megan McConnell, which were two prolific casting directors that were incredible ladies. And we did a couple of shows together for a very short time. And then I got a job at Lifetime Television as an executive because I thought, oh, here's a great way to, you know, make some money and have some stability. And so I worked there as the manager of casting and talent. It was not for me. It was very corporate, lots of meetings, lots of having to wear, you know, business attire. It was not for me. And I lasted there 2.5 years. And then I went and worked for April Webster for a handful of years as a casting director under her umbrella. And then I started my own company with Eric Soulier. And then he and I were partners for a while. And then he moved to New York. And then I just became Sarah Isaacson Casting. I guess I'm on year 5. I think it's year 5 of just Sarah Isaacson Casting. So, you know, along the way, doing lots of shows that came and went, pilots that came and went. And now I'm doing Chicago Fire and Chicago Med out of LA. I know that you guys spoke to Jenny, and that's how I was introduced to you guys. And she's continuing to do Chicago PD. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah. So that's the nutshell. I mean, I've, you know, over the years, I've told that story so many different ways, but that's just sort of the resume to get to where I've gone, you know, where I'm at now.
Wow.
Wow. I mean, story. What I'm so curious about is how did you know you wanted to go into casting?
I wasn't a very good actor, and there were actors in my class around me that were. And I can see the work they were doing. And I thought, I don't want to do that. That looks really hard. And so I thought, well, what else? I mean, I knew I just wanted to be in theater in the industry. And so I was stage managing, I was directing. And this same friend that introduced me to Steppenwolf was interning in a casting office in Chicago and asked if I wanted to come intern there. And I did. And I loved it so much that I became an assistant. And I just – and then ended up skipping classes at Columbia in order to go work as an assistant in this casting office. And I think it was because I was able to read with actors or see actors in the room, and I got to be a part of it without having to actually do it. But witnessing the work in front of me was so exhilarating. It still is. It's still one of the most fun – things about casting is that I get to read opposite actors doing their work. That is so incredible. And I just loved it so much. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to do anything else. And from that experience is why I decided to go to LA to pursue casting.
Yeah. And that's interesting too, the move from kind of doing more theater in Chicago to moving to LA and transitioning into the world of TV and film. What was that like for you? Kind of, was that like a dive off the deep end, like, whoa, totally crazy and different? Or did you feel prepared from the work that you were doing in Chicago?
No. Well, first of all, I was such a young person and I wasn't actually doing, you know, I was an assistant, so I wasn't doing the work of the casting director, obviously. But it was so exhilarating to be in LA in auditions, I wasn't always in the room, but even in the lobby to see the actors coming in and out. And I remember working with Jeff as a little assistant and just seeing the actors in the lobby and thinking, these are actors that are on TV, and like how cool that was. But to me, my love of the theater is first and foremost always. And I still get the most excited and the most thrills from seeing actors on stage. Does that answer your question? I don't even remember your question now.
Yeah, no, it totally does. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the enthusiasm and passion for working with actors, it really doesn't matter which medium for you. It's just a joy and passion that's there. That's so evident.
Yes.
So actually, I'm curious about another part of your story. You mentioned to us off the air that you also were an agent for a year.
Oh, God, I forgot that in my history of my career. I forgot to mention that. When did that happen? That happened after I worked. Wait, when did that happen? Oh, I guess after I left Lifetime Television and before I worked for April. Oh, I had this idea that I wanted to make a lot of money, like a lot. And I thought that being an agent or manager, you could make a lot of money because you get a client or two on a TV show and then you get their, you know, their percentage. And then you make a lot of money. Well, guess what, you guys? It's not true. But it was not, I was not cut out to be an agent at all, at all. I have so much respect for agents and managers. I always did, but even more so now, I just feel like I understand where they're coming from. And so I do my best to give them the benefit of the doubt always, because even though it was a while ago, it was 13 years ago that I worked at an agency. Yeah. I still know the hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And,
but it was not, I was not cut out to be an agent at all, at all. I have so much respect for agents and managers. I always did, but even more so now, I just feel like I understand where they're coming from. And so I do my best to give them the benefit of the doubt always, because even though it was a while ago, it was 13 years ago that I worked at an agency. Yeah. I still know the hustle.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just seemed like so much of a better fit for you. And I think that it can be tough in this business where there are a lot of different paths you can go down, a lot of different ways your career could go, to not know exactly where to be focused on and like what to do with your life or where you'll be successful. And for you, it's so amazing that it's always been casting. I think that's really cool.
Well, also, I forgot to mention this part of the story too. When I was at Lifetime Television for 2.5 years, and that I knew immediately was not for me, but it was job security and it was more money than I had ever made. And I was also, but I was also only like, let's say I was 27, 28 or something like that. And I'm glad I had that corporate experience to get a sense from the casting executive side. You know, there are casting directors who do the sort of day-to-day work of casting, and then the executives at the studios and at the networks that approve those actors. I mean, they do far more than that, but I have now a better sense of when I have to communicate with the studio network what those jobs are, because I did that for, you know, 2.5 years. Now, granted, it was Lifetime Television and wasn't like Netflix or, you know, NBC or anything, but still it was that sort of position where you are supervising casting directors. So I feel like I have a good balance of like understanding other people's positions and having empathy, I guess, maybe for the other positions. But yes, thank you. Yes. At the end of the day, I just want to cast TV shows. Not just, but I want to cast TV shows.
That's awesome. And yeah, the empathy, that was the word that came to mind as you were telling the story too of working at an agency. Like, that's such a crucial thing in our industry. And I feel like there should be a lot more of, but in the hustle and bustle of everything and deadlines and like how many emails are coming in and work, I think sometimes we forget about that, having empathy for the collaboration process.
Well, because everyone is just I feel like everyone is proving their job. Everyone wants to get their clients' appointments, whatever it takes, because without an appointment, the person can't get the job. And if you don't get the job, you don't get paid. So there's just so much desperation, especially now with like self-tapes, and we're not seeing people, or at least I'm not seeing people in the room. So there's some wiggle room to see more people now than if we were to see people in the room. So if the idea is that clients can just self-tape, why not just give me all of the appointments? Because you don't have to be in the room with them. Well, I have to watch them all. Mm-hmm. So I understand the hustle and the, to some extent, begging of appointments. And yet I do my best to really cull through all of the submissions and only give the, well, I guess I'm a little bit lenient sometimes because I understand the frustration or the need to get certain clients' appointments. So I definitely do give out way more appointments than I ever did because they are self-tapes and I can watch them, you know. But guess what, guys? And if anyone tells you different, I want to talk to those casting directors. I cannot watch every moment of every scene of every actor. So yes, you're getting appointments and yes, they're being watched. This idea that tapes are not being watched is very frustrating from our end. And I think that that's an excuse actors give themselves when they don't get a job. Oh, they didn't watch mine. Oh, yeah? Maybe you just didn't get it.
Yeah.
You know? It's not that we're not watching it. We're watching it. Just someone else got the job.
Yeah. Okay. So we wanted to talk about this. So I'm glad it came up. Let's talk about self-tapes.
Okay. But I also didn't want to cut you off about like the empathy because –
Oh, yes.
It is true. Like I feel like so much of us are doing our best to, you know, be kind under the circumstances, which is everyone's working from home. There's no feedback for actors. They think that their tapes are just being lost in the, you know, in the World Wide Web. And you don't get a sense from us one-on-one that we even like you. Because there's no like, hey, great to meet you, or thanks for doing that. That was really great work. There's no feedback. And so I think that, yeah, God, it's tough. It's just tough.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, for Sarah Isaacson casting, I watch everything. As long as it's in by the deadline, I'll watch it. But if it's after the deadline, and because you had technical difficulties, you should have started uploading sooner.
Yeah. I hear that. Yeah. I remember you've talked about this on other platforms before in podcasts, but yeah, when you posted the photo on Instagram of the submissions, like 5,600 submissions and then like 101 something scheduled appointments, like that really blew my mind. A lot of people's minds.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy to sift through 5,600 something submissions.
What? Yep. That was for a 3-episode recurring character. And so on average, if I'm just releasing a one-off guest star and he or she is in her, you know, let's just say, you know, late 20s, early 30s, any ethnicity, I'll definitely on average get about 4,500 submissions.
For a guest star.
For one-off, yeah.
Like a one-day guest star.
No, like a top of show, like a guest star as in like 2 days or more would be like a top of show guest star.
Got it.
But if it's recurring, depending on the role, if it's very specific, it's like, you know, 50s black military, then maybe it won't be that many. But if it's an open and you're in your 20s or 30s, that's just everyone, you know? So, yeah, it's a lot. And then on average, you know, for a one-off guest star, I'll give 60 to 80 appointments. But I'd say about, I don't know, let's say 10 pass. A handful aren't available. Some are already done the show. I'll end up watching 40 or 50 self-tapes. And then I usually send 6, no more than 8 to producers per role.
Wow. And what's the time frame like to watch, let's say, 40 or 50 tapes.
Well, so in our self tapes, we say no later than, you know, 10 a.m. or 5 p.m. with the idea that if you can upload it beforehand, do. And I, all day long, I'll refresh the site to see if there are new auditions uploaded. And there are times where if I feel really ready and I feel like, you know what, these six are great and it's an hour before the deadline, I'll go ahead and send my link.
Wow.
Especially if the Chicago office is ready to send their link. Because that 1 hour is precious, because we need as much time as possible for the producers to watch, because sometimes that could take a day, day and a half. Then we need time for the studio network to watch. That can be another day, potentially. And then we need time to negotiate a deal. And then also with COVID, we need time for COVID testing and travel. So my feeling is get it in early, because you don't know if there's going to be technical difficulties. If the tape is due at 10 a.m. and you're uploading at 9:30 and there's technical difficulties, with all due respect, that's not my problem.
Yeah.
And you're several other people are probably also having technical difficulties. So I have to watch quickly. There's a deadline for a reason. I have scheduled it accordingly so I can watch everything. And then on Chicago Med, I have to go back to every agent and to confirm that their client understands the vaccine mandate. And that can take several hours. So I schedule it exactly for what I need. And so in order to get my link in on time to producers. So if an actor thinks that they are going to skirt the system by getting in their tape an hour later and they think, well, it's just an hour later. Well, then you did not understand the assignment.
Right.
Lauren, how many times has it come up this season to get your tapes, your auditions in early? This is like the third or fourth time.
Yeah, for real. For real. And now I'm understanding more. Every explanation I understand more, but this really drives it home how important that final hour is before you send those links to producers. Like, yeah, that makes so much sense. If you've already found your top six choices, there you go. It's done.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that the people who, you know, by the way, this isn't always. Sometimes I have several hours after the deadline to watch. It really varies, but there's no way that you as the actor will know my timeline. So instead of assuming that you have some wiggle room, assume that the deadline is for a reason. You wouldn't show up to the audition an hour late. Why would you turn in your self-tape an hour late? It's an audition. You have a call time. Call time is 10 a.m. That's when the audition is due, the same way that you would show up, you know, exactly on time. And if you don't, my assumption is that you won't get to set on time.
Yes, that's right. Every part of the process really lets you know something about the actor who's going to be, I guess, not in the room, but who's going to be on set. And are they going to be okay and trustworthy? Yeah.
Especially now, because I can't meet people in the room or have like a one-on-one dialogue. I can't say to producers, you know, he or she was fantastic. She did it in one take and she was so cool. She was so respectful. This is me watching self-tapes, having no idea if you did it in one take or 6 hours.
Right.
So I'm sending these auditions hoping that the actor's audition that I'm watching is what they're going to get on set at the first take. And sometimes if it's a young adult or someone I don't know, for the most part, I'll call an agent or manager and be like, tell me about Lauren. Like, her audition was great. Is she someone that did this in an hour or six?
I appreciate being called a young adult, by the way. Making my morning.
That's what I'm here for. But yeah, because I have no concept of how many takes that person did to get to that take that they sent. So I don't know who I'm sending to the set.
Yeah, I mean, that's tough. And I think the thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about self-tapes and when to get auditions in goes back to that empathy piece, right? It is not empathetic or not compassionate to think that there's some flexibility with the deadline or something's not a big deal. And I think that it's just so important for us to all have respect for the different parts of the process. We can't really 100% understand what's going on in other people's lives and business. And so just having respect and empathy and all that, very, very important. But going back to self-tapes specifically, I know that there was a lot we wanted to cover about that today. So can you just kind of, I guess, talk about, like, I don't know, demystifying it? Like, what are the things that we should know about self-tapes?
Every office will have their own set of instructions for self-tape. And I promise you, it will be listed on your audition. So read the directions. Never assume that the instructions for one office will be the same for someone else. And they're specifically written per office because we each have our own needs. So in other words, I want a slate with your name, your height, where you're based, and where you're currently located. And for me, that gives me an opportunity to hear how your name is pronounced first and foremost. When an actor does not include a slate, it's just mind-boggling to me why an actor would think not to include a slate. How do I have any idea who you are? So yeah. Include your first and last name so I know who you are and also how to pronounce your name. I want to know where you're based and where you're located, because in the times of the pandemic, a lot of us are located in a city that they're not currently based because they're with friends or family or whatever. And I want each scene in its own clip, as opposed to one long clip with the scenes edited together. This allows me to decide if I want to include a scene or not, because maybe you're great in two and not great in a third, and I just don't want to send that third scene. Maybe I want to reorder the scenes. Maybe after a day of auditions, producer said, you know what, we don't want that first scene. But when you slice it all together and do not follow the directions, then I can't do that with you, and I'll just move on to another actor.
That's really interesting.
That's just me. Now, if I had all the manpower or woman power and all the time, we could splice together those auditions, you know, cut and paste them. But you send in an audition and all three scenes are in one take and I only want two scenes, I'll probably just move on to someone else, because you didn't follow the instructions. Because what? You thought you were better than someone else because you didn't think it mattered to you? You didn't take the 45 seconds it took to read the instructions? That tells me everything I need to know about you as an actor. Full stop. Imagine going for an interview in any other industry besides self-taping and not following the directions, or showing up an hour late, like when an actor sends in a tape an hour late. And you wouldn't do that in any other industry. There's a reason. You don't know more than I do, I promise you, about why I need it and how I need it.
Right.
Yeah, that is really interesting to hear that. So that's specific for your office. Mm-hmm. But then sometimes you get, like, and I'm sure you get a lot of this from agents and managers, from our actors reaching out as well, being like, okay, so I'm on vacation right now and I'm not in my apartment or my home, or, you know, I'm on set of another project, but I still want to tape. Like, is it okay to do X, Y, and Z?
Yes. But if you ask that question, then that allows me to have that conversation.
Right.
If you tell me that that's the situation, I can at least be a little bit lenient. Like, does an agent ask for an extension and I give it? Of course.
Yeah.
But often no one even asks or gives us a heads up. And then an hour or two or the next day, they'll forward the audition to me because the link to upload is expired. They'll say, the link is expired. Here's the audition. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Oh.
And then they'll ask what I thought of it. I go, I've cast the role already.
Oh, man. So what is it for you when you're watching, you know, those 40 or 50 tapes? What jumps out to you off the screen? Like, what are you responding to that you're like, this person I would send to producers?
Well, yeah. You know, I always sort of, anytime anyone asks me that, I then turn it on to the person asking the question. It's like, when you watch something, a TV show or a movie, what is it for you that draws you in? I mean, and you know, that's a rhetorical question because it's different for the three of us. It's different for every single one of us. So, and also based on the project, it's like I can look an audition now, you know, halfway through my first season on these shows. And because I've watched every episode of every season of these shows, I have a sense of the tone and the sort of type of actor that fits this world, whether it's Med or Fire. And I have a sense of what the previous characters have been, what NBC probably would respond to. So I'm looking at it from that lens, from the lens of, is this an actor that is of this world? If I was doing a period piece or Handmaid's Tale or, you know, when the Americans, which is one of my favorite shows, like you have to watch through the lens of those characters. For those producers, that studio, that network, that director, it all varies. So what I respond to on these shows is going to be different than what I respond to when I'm just watching something as myself, watching TV just to wind down or relax or for enjoyment. So what am I looking for? A good actor, first and foremost. I'm looking for someone interesting, someone smart, someone thoughtful, and someone who is of this world. And that is going to change based on the projects that I'm working on.
Yes, that makes so much sense. And something I think about a lot too, like the art of auditioning is different than the art of being on set. I've like thought about that more this past year too, when we're kind of in this self-tape vacuum and we're, you know, just more than usual kind of sending out auditions, kind of trusting our own instincts without, like you said, being in a room and getting adjustments and getting a sense of, casting director and actor. And so that's something I've thought about a lot, this idea of being thoughtful and smart in your audition process, knowing that like these choices you're making of, creating an environment, or if you have a prop that's not silly to use that works for a scene, like those are the kinds of things that maybe we have more available to us now as artists than we did when we were going into rooms. You know, there is a little bit more room to be creative and thoughtful and design your space the way you want to, dress the way you want to. But I'm curious how that translates for you watching. Have you noticed a difference in maybe seeing tapes over the past year and a quarter?
Well, you know what? Maybe it's just these particular shows. No, like it's not like I've seen people take advantage of like, self-taping in their kitchen while eating. Although actually, you know what? Hold on a second. I take this back. I was casting a show called Connecting for NBC last year. It was a half hour. And there was, we had to find a married couple because of quarantine. It had to be two actors that were actually married because everyone had to record from their own homes.
Oh, wow.
And so turns out there's a lot of married actors because it was just like I got so many auditions. And in the audition scene, they are eating, one of them just made ramen, I think what it was. And many people in the audition sat at their dining room table and ate out of like ramen out of bowls, or at least had the dining room or kitchen set up where that's where they recorded the audition. And funny enough, the couple that got it, the Powells, Keith Powell and Jill Knox, they did, I'll never forget it because it was so beautiful. Again, not the reason why they got it, but it definitely helped. And it was a part of the conversation with them when they did a screen test for us, was that they, where their camera was set up in their dining room and how they blocked themselves was so interesting and easy to do, but no one else really thought of to do it this way. And it definitely caught our eye, but also they were, you know, they were great. And so that's why they got it, having nothing to do with their setup, but it definitely, you know, it didn't hurt them.
Yeah.
But no, I have,
I said it kind of elevates it a little bit though. They'd be like, oh wow, that's different and cool. It stands out.
That's exactly right. But you know, I can't think of, you know, outside of that, I'm not sure if like, it's not like I've seen people take advantage of, you know, their home outside of maybe that. Every once in a while you'll see someone like, you know, self-tape outside if they're outside. But again, that's not going to make or break you from getting the job.
Right.
Right. That's very interesting. Going in a little bit of a different direction, we wanted to talk about what you do outside of the industry to stay positive and really just what hobbies and interests you have outside of the biz.
Well, sometimes I'm not positive, you know?
Fair.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just really hard and you spend 3 hours watching like, you know, TV and you're like, what have I done today? You know?
Relatable.
What'd you say?
Relatable.
But I have a fiance that is super fun, and he has taught me a lot about football and basketball. So we will often throw a football around outside, or there's a park nearby and we'll go shoot some hoops. I know that sounds, for anyone who knows me that may be even listening at all, it's shocking. It is, but it's so fun. So we do that. I do a lot of walks by myself, listening to podcasts. That is, I need that time, especially because we're just working from home all the time. And I'll realize that I've been home all day and haven't like left my office. So for me, getting out and listening to a podcast is very helpful. Especially your podcast. I just listen to yours over and over again. But I also, you know, I see my friends, like I was saying in the beginning, like I have a friend who's got a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old, and seeing them is so fantastic. I just love hanging out with them. They're such good kids and my friends are great. So I don't know. How do I stay positive? Therapy helps. Walking helps, talking to friends, watching HGTV. Decaf almond lattes.
Oh.
And then the some days just not, like not positive, feeling like, what am I doing? What's happening in the world? And then I just pick myself up and dust myself off and try again the next day. We cook a lot. You know, I mean, like all the stuff that you like do as adults, you know? Like hanging out with your fiance and cooking. I mean, I don't know. What do you guys do? What do you guys do?
Great answers. You could go first.
Yeah, no, I agree. So much of that is relatable. And yeah, I love that you're also acknowledging that, yeah, sometimes things just suck and it's okay to just be in that place if you need to just have that moment to be like, wow, things are really shitty right now. I'm going to do nothing. And then when the moment is right, like I'm going to pick myself up. And sometimes it is just a matter of like taking the day off, taking care of yourself. And then you would go to sleep and the next day you're like different mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a lot of that is very relatable to me. Watching TV, cooking has become something like pre-pandemic. It was like cooking, maybe that's once or twice a week. And I'm like, huh, this is actually enjoyable to spend time, kind of an act of self-care, and make something delicious and just feel good and comforted. Mm-hmm. And yoga for me is another one. If I just move and get out of my head, running, which is another thing pre-pandemic, what the heck? Running outside was never something I would do.
Interesting.
Yeah, now I'm like, I don't feel safe being in a gym anytime soon. Maybe when it drops to 20 degrees here, I'll reconsider. But so I'll end spending time with friends and with my husband and our dog.
Yeah.
Aww.
Awesome. What do you do, Alyssa?
Such good answers. Just taking a walk around the block, hanging out with my dog. I definitely watch a ton of TV. I read a lot. And I'm a very big cycler. I have a stationary bike that I have paired with the Peloton app, which I am pretty obsessed with. Also cooking. I'm a plant-based vegan, so I kind of make everything from scratch. So there's always something new to try to make, you know, childhood faves plant-based. That's always interesting. It used to not always turn out great. Now I have some experience. I've gotten a little bit better. But yeah, just trying to stay active and entertained and well-fed.
Yeah.
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 While also, like you said, knowing that not every day needs to be positive, not every day needs to feel fulfilling, and not every day am I going to love my career or my life even, and that's what I have to do.
Yeah, yeah. You got to give yourself grace on those days.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Sarah, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been so great to hear your story and getting to know you. And we also always appreciate these moments of like what Alyssa and I call real talk on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like just, yeah, talking about not just the light and the positive, but also some things that are like just really going on.
Yeah, we all picked like a really hard industry to be in, you know, and so there, we should all be giving each other and ourselves lots of grace. And this is the real stuff. Just because, you know, I'm on the other side of the table doesn't mean that we don't all have the same, you know, fears or insecurities or, you know, days where we're not incredibly motivated. Sometimes we just want to go home and like watch Netflix, and that's okay too.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yes. Thank you so much. It was so lovely speaking with you about all of this. And thank you for your perspective. And it was great to hear your story.
Of course. Thank you for having me. And it was lovely to meet both of you.
Thank you so much for listening. We always love hearing from you. You can email us at positivecreativitypodcast@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at positivecreativitypodcast. And for more info on our guest today, please view the show notes. Join us next time on Positive Creativity Podcast.